Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the show where we come up with five sketch ideas. I'm Andy.
And I'm Alistair George William Trombley Birchall.
And already, already it's going so much better. This is, you have no idea what you missed out on in terms of the episode that we just abandoned. Where
yes. Where the music was not music. The words were barely words.
The riffing was so unpleasant.
It was gross.
And it the only reason that everything hadn't gone wrong was because there hadn't yet been time for things to go wrong.
No, yeah, that's
but
right.
But the writing
that's
was right. on the wall.
Yeah, we were likely going to lose our physical form throughout that turn to some kind of goop. The bonds in our hydrocarbony kind of chains.
It's a great idea.
Would have lost a
conversation so uncomfortable that it turns you to liquid. You lose
at least goop.
Oh, I'm sorry. You don't consider goop to be liquid?
Goop? Oh, do you think goop? I think of goop as a semi-liquid, like more gelatinous.
Does it flow? Does goop flow? Does your goop flow?
I've never pictured that much goop.
Well, in a you think of it as being like limited in a sort of a droplet.
I see it more in a pile.
A pile, but does it settle in any way?
Yeah, it kind of settles. Mm. It finds a structure that wouldn't hold if you applied any forces to it, but that, you know, with gravity.
I think we should lobby to get goop classified as a new state of matter. Gloop. It's gloop, isn't it? Gloop. Goop is that Gwyneth Paltrow thing. This is gloop.
Yeah, I know, but she didn't make up that word.
Yeah, I know, but I don't think we want to get into that territory. You know, I don't want to tread on her toes.
We can't reclaim goop.
I don't want to go up against that.
Look at, oh my God,
goop industrial complex.
My description was so good. Look at this meaning on dictionary.com. Google. Sloppy or sticky semi-fluid matter, typically something unpleasant.
It's pretty good.
Now let's look up gloop. Sloppy or sticky semi-fluid matter, typically something unpleasant.
Wow. So that L has no effect on the meaning of the word. You could put as many of those L's in there as you wanted to, and it wouldn't change the meaning.
Well,
you
look,
could
the
chuck
only
L's all over the place.
Goop says that it's informal but North American. Gloop says it's informal but it doesn't have a location. But the examples are slightly different. One, goop has mawkish sentiment. Mm. Know what that means. But then the other one has an example of using it. It says, this is gloop. The chicken tikka masala would arrive in a thick liquid gloop.
If they put that on the menu, I'm I'm less than keen. What I like, though, is that gloop doesn't only imply in North America. It does appear to be universal. And as far as we know, it could be a true universal constant. It could be part of a sort of a meta-er language that could be understood, you know, anywhere in the universe. Whereas if you said goop, the aliens would just look at you with a furrowed antennae. But gloop... Yeah, they're on board. be great if that was the only thing. We meet aliens and we try to communicate with them arrival style for 50 years. And the only thing we can agree on at the end of that is the word gloop. And if we say gloop, they'll point to a pile of gloop. And likewise,
they take you onto their ship and they show you the corner where there's just some gloop.
Yeah.
And that's their toilet corner.
And then we try and build a, an inter-civilization form of communication, basics entirely around the word gloop and the concept of gloop. And
What's interesting is that, this is based off of an idea we had ages ago, that we, this idea of an alien species who maybe kidnaps us or hires us to smell things for them and tell them what it's like because they don't have senses of smell.
Mm.
Could you imagine walking onto their ship and the incredible stink that they might have?
Yeah.
They've never fixed because they don't have a sense of smell.
Mm.
They don't have a concept of smell. They might just have a toilet corner.
Well, I also think, though, that maybe they're extremely sensitive in other ways, emotionally sensitive, and they don't deal well with criticism. And the reason that no other species that they've encountered has told them about this is because when they do, they take it really badly and they probably start a war or something. So we need, and I imagine they're probably quite desperate, like as you would be if you can't handle criticism, but you know something is wrong and you don't have the strength to listen to what people are telling you and take it
or the
in
ears.
Good faith. And I think what it would have to be is we would have to ignore it for a really long... Sorry, yes, all the ears, Alistair. But what we would have to do is we'd have to ignore it for a really long time and just build up trust, okay? Maybe over generations with this other species, living alongside them. And we all, as humans, agree not to mention it, right? We're not going to bring it up, the smell, okay? Until, 1,000, 2,000 years have passed and we're living alongside each other as close as brother and sister. And then finally, as a species, we humans say, all right, it's time to bring this up. But of course, by that point, we've been living alongside them for so long, we don't even notice the smell. And we, in fact, start to smell, because we can't detect that smell anymore. We forget what it even was we were going to bring up. Okay,
I guess we spent so long hanging out with them.
And now we smell just as bad. And then we also get shunned by the broader galactic community. And that's... what does that tell you about...
I guess...
Toxic relationships?
I guess, no, I don't know. Well, I guess probably what would happen is that I guess the reason why we bothered being friends with them, despite them having such a bad smell, is that they probably give us some huge benefit like technology that we never would have had, or even access to a galactic community.
Or they were just charming.
Do you understand what a privilege it is to be shunned by the galactic community? Because it means that you're a part of the galactic community.
It doesn't, though. I think that's sort of the opposite of what it means in a way.
No, but think about it, Eddie.
Yeah.
Are we being shunned by the galactic community, or does the galactic community not even know about us?
We don't
even have access to them. Mm. So is this worse than sort of them all knowing about who we are and how great we are and things like that, and then getting rid of us because of our stank?
It's like intergalactic Oscar Wilde said, the only thing worse than being shunned by the galactic community is not being shunned by the galactic community.
Did he say that?
Yeah, that was what alien Oscar Wilde said. Alistair, here's a sketch idea for you.
Right? Yeah, but wait, is any of this a sketch idea? Should I write any of this?
I think...
I guess it's an old sketch idea.
No, but I think the idea of aliens coming down and us not... trying not to mention something is good as a sketch idea.
Yeah.
Whatever that actually is, whatever particular personal habit that they all have that's really unpleasant. We just
but they stink. Remember, and it's like this is all the recordings that we play to humans.
Mm.
We've made contact, and it's incredible. But just to let you know, they all stink, and we can't mention it because they just seem a bit sensitive.
Mm. Well, I mean, maybe a scout ship arrives, bearing one heavily injured envoy from another civilization that was wiped out by these guys because they got offended when they mentioned that they stink. So their warning to us is not to bring it up. And that then becomes our challenge as a species.
Sure. Sure. That's great.
And, you know, it's a kind of politeness that we have to adopt as a defense mechanism. And maybe even is enforced. It becomes the legal form of politeness. Is that what all laws are? Just a kind of legal politeness? Just things that you're not.
I guess in a way to murder is rude.
Mm.
To steal is rude.
Rude.
To park somewhere for too long is rude.
Rude. I think that's what it is. It's just a formal rudeness. Formalized.
It's inconvenient.
Rudeness.
Well, because it's inconvenient for other people. For your benefit.
Indeed.
It's when you're rude or you make things that are inconvenient for others for your benefit.
You're a rude dude.
I think that's kind of... Yeah, it's a conflict resolution.
What do you think of this as a sketch idea, Alistair?
All right.
Exercise unicycle. What do you think of that?
So you just have one in your house?
Just have one in your house. You just ride it inside.
Yeah,
you know, or maybe it's a type of spin class that it's all done on unicycles and you all have to wear a top hat or some kind of fucking
it's a, like
stupid
a sweat absorbing top hat.
Yeah, it's made from really high tech fabric.
A breathable top hat.
Yeah, yeah. There's a special kind of tweed vest that it's a lycra tweed blend. It's the most high performance tweed, checkered tweed vest that exists. I just think, you know, we've got the exercise bike and we've got the exercise rowing machine, but there are so many other forms of transport that we are yet to turn into a form of exercise. We've got the treadmill. Yeah. We've got the step,
which is walking exercise. It's an exercise footpath.
You've got the cross trainer. What about one for climbing? What about
It'd be good if they could build the treadmill right into the shoe.
That would be good. That must be a thing somewhere, right? That there are
a treadmill shoe. Because you're recreating the road.
You basically have under your feet, a little track, like a little like bulldozer track type thing, caterpillar track.
Yeah.
That as you, but running in the opposite direction.
Yeah, I think so.
To keep you standing still.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
I think it would lead to some injuries at first, but once you got the knack, I guess it could probably read with some computer vision. It could probably read the speed at which your feet are moving.
Mm.
And so adjust how fast it should be going based off of that.
Definitely. It would have to. Yeah. To keep you in the same place. Yes, it does. Yeah. All of that. Probably be quite heavy, the boots, you know.
I think it'd be a heavy boot.
Well, we'd make it as light as possible, obviously.
Yeah, we don't have to. I suppose we could make it really heavy.
Well, this is my thing always with exercise. Why would you ever do anything to make it easier? Why would you ever buy special running shoes and put on Lycra or whatever? It's supposed to be hard. Don't.
Yeah. The whole point is that you're burning energy. I know. That's the thing with cyclists and stuff like that. Like, I get that you're, like, there's one aspect in which there's a competition and you want to wear Lycra for that.
But if you're just doing it for exercise.
But why wear speed? Why? Yeah, for exercise, why wear Speedos if you're swimming? Why not wear, like, cargo pants? The whole point is that you're there to work out.
You know, you make swimming difficult enough, we could make pools really short, you know, just 3 or 4 meters at the Olympics, right? In the future, when space is at such a premium, it'll be an unimaginable luxury to have a 50-meter swimming pool. And, you know, we'll need that space for hospitals and apartment buildings. And yeah. So, you know, probably the maximum length they'll be able to be will be about 4 meters. And then we'll just need to work out the ways in which we make it more difficult for the swimmers so that they still take approximately the same time to cover that form. These are the most elite athletes in the world still take several minutes.
Well, you could make the pools shorter by making the liquid more viscous.
You absolutely could. Although I think I've seen something about this, which is that as well as making it harder to move forward, they also give you more to push on. So viscous liquids in some ways are easier to swim through. Is that true?
Well, I don't know. Whatever it is, maybe, you know, if you got to make it oil, or if you got to make it something, you know, something that's
poisonous,
closer to a gas,
acidic
poison, you know. I don't know. Is that what is a very thin liquid? I guess oil is something like that, right? Because it's
That's a really, really good question.
What's the least viscous liquid?
The thinnest, lightest liquid.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I suppose oil does float on water, but it's in some ways it feels more viscous, right? Like it can be quite thick, even though it's light.
Yeah, well, it says here that the ethyl alcohol is the least viscous fluid.
There you go.
You could A, acquire a large enough quantity to swim in, and B, not die from dipping your body into.
Right, so they'll be swimming through pure alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would bring its own challenges, and I think that's really promising. But
it would also allow, you know, put a limit on how long people can stay in there, which is also what we kind of want with this high turnover kind of short pool that we're creating. Again, we're not sure whether making a low viscosity pool is going to make things more difficult or what. I guess, is it easier to drown in?
I think that is the case. I think that you would not float very possibly in that liquid.
Which allows us to make it more shallow so that people can stand up so that they don't die.
Great.
But I suppose if you do die, your body will be pretty well preserved. And I guess, you know, it'll be more, I don't know, just be neater for getting the body back to your parents.
It'll be very neat. Yeah.
Assuming your parents outlive you.
assuming you're on good terms with your parents and they would be interested to see your preserved body after you die. Oh, well, I guess I'm interested. Yeah, okay.
Ah,
send it along.
He's dead? Well, let me see his body then. Oh, I don't believe you. This is some ruse that he's come up with to trick me. And I want to double check that this person who I thought I trusted.
An exercise skateboard. An exercise
or
razor scooter. Yes, indeed. An exercise car. So,
what about exercise boxing gloves?
Okay, so how does that work?
Yeah, that's what I find. That's what I'm finding myself thinking of. Let's just say for the fuck of it that they have sort of rocket jet and, you know, powered, rocket powered propulsion jets in the front of them. Right?
That blast so that back towards you.
Yeah.
Mm.
So
that's
that
a
it
really
feels,
good idea.
It feels like you're making impact.
Or at least punching or into a very thick fog.
Yeah. Resistance boxing gloves.
Sure. I think there should be a gas, you know, a room that has a really, really dense gas in it that makes it harder to punch and harder to move through. That would be quite good. But, you know, we're back in territory.
Yeah, I suppose if you had a very heavy, a heavy gas that you could maybe, you could box with a snorkel on so that your snorkel goes up above the gas. You can breathe regular air.
Yep.
Because I think having oxygen tanks and shit like that will be just too cumbersome. Just wear a snorkel and a mask.
Fucking hell, this is getting annoying and cumbersome. Yeah.
Cumbersome.
This wasn't ever supposed to be difficult and complicated when we decided to fill the room with dense gas. Yes. What about my exercise car idea, Alistair? Didn't seem like you were very interested.
Oh, I didn't hear that. An exercise car.
Yeah. It's a little sort of stripped down little car thing that you have.
Yeah.
And in the corner of the room, there's two pedals. You know, you've got to turn the key in the door to get in. And you've got to turn the key again, obviously, in the ignition. You've got a wheel to turn, pedals to push up and down, little indicator lights to flick. You know, there's probably a lot of incidental exercise to be had. People don't talk about it enough. We might be able to refine it.
Leaning over instead of trying to get the Bluetooth working.
Exactly. Taking your eyes off the road, panicking, whipping your head back up again because...
Yeah, looking down at your phone, looking back up as you try to pick a podcast, trying to find a topic that interests you.
Exactly. Skipping through the ads.
Yeah. Trying to use the sort of the plus 15 second button.
It's a good button. It's a good button.
Yeah. I think it's hard when you're not looking at the phone. It's when you think that you get the gist of the idea of where the buttons should be without looking at the screen. While you're driving, you're like, I mean, I've typed out a message before and just been like, I don't need to look.
This is exactly what I do as well, Alistair. And it's so bad.
It's the worst thing to do in the world.
And unnecessary. Yeah. It is completely putting our lives at risk. Our lives and other people's lives, Alistair.
Everybody's lives are at risk.
Everybody's lives.
When you come out of it and you've completed it and you realize how far away your attention was.
Oh, and the shame hits you.
Oh, the shame, the amount that you're risking for the so little reward.
The tiny, tiny reward.
Oh, it's, yeah. I mean, I have on many occasions pulled over.
And that's great. But, I mean, I guess the best that we can hope for is just to somehow by chance survive until self-driving cars become common. And because, you know, behavior change is, as we know, impossible. And it's stupid to think that you can. Once you've got a habit like this, toxic habit, you're stuck with it for life. And, you know, unless there's some sort of methadone type thing that I can do to wean myself off. Maybe I'll just get some methadone.
You get a little vial of methadone and you could press on it while you're driving.
Tapping
on
it.
Use your thumb. Yeah. Tap. You know, if they painted maybe a little key, like digital keyboard on it. Maybe they could integrate a screen that actually works, allows you to make phone calls.
Maybe.
Send texts.
I suppose, you know, either we could do that. We could get self-driving cars or we could just get additional eyes, a new set of eyes built into her head, sort of pointing down at a down and to the left at a 45-degree angle.
A second set of eyes.
Second set of eyes, maybe in the cheek.
What about
or
under the chin?
Like
under the chin.
That
area that usually kind of folds up into unpleasantness. You smooth it out. You smooth it out. Get some eyes in there. Maybe just one eye.
Just one eye. Why just two? One big eye.
Well,
my
we don't need
eye.
Depth. We yeah. don't need depth perception because we're
just
always
looking
just
at a 2D screen. At,
yeah.
That's a really good idea, Alistair. Either that or we sort of medicalize the lazy eye and we separate the vision processing of the two eyes. And we just, you know, you can have one eye on the road and one eye looking at your phone.
Would you think it would be more of a chin eye? It's like just a chin eye that kind of looks diagonally.
I understand the chin eye, but I was thinking, you know, if we just cut the muscles that help your eye to move around, right?
Yeah.
And then just let it loll. One of your eyes
the other one
flops looking down.
Yeah.
And you could use it
to look
at your phone.
I get that. I just don't really want to compromise my regular eyes. Do you understand that? Do you get that?
I get that, Alistair, sure. Okay, but it just seems like you don't really want this. You know, that you're putting all your faith in this almost impossible sort of chin-eye technology.
Okay,
whereas
I'm
offering you almost real solutions here.
Well, no,
but
you've heard this. Okay, I know. Yours is definitely more doable right now, at the moment. Mm. But you've heard of the cochlear implant, right? The cochlear hearing aid, whatever. What about this? The cochlear eye.
Cochlear eye.
I guess you just use whatever the same nerve.
Not for people who are impaired, although maybe we are impaired. You know, maybe having what we think is full vision is a type of impairment because at the moment it's stopping me from living the life that I want to lead, which is one where I can look at my phone constantly while I drive and not feel bad.
Yeah, except feel bad that I spend so much time of my life looking at my phone.
Yeah, well, I'll feel a different type of bad. I'll feel the kind of bad that I get when I'm looking at Twitter constantly.
I think that I only feel that way because there's times when I'm not looking at my phone.
and because I know that when I'm looking at my phone, I'm not looking at other things that I should be looking at, right? But if my other eyes are free to look at other things, this could actually be true happiness.
Yeah. Look, how am I going to write this? Extra eye.
On the chin.
Four.
Hmm.
Maybe on chin. I wasn't going to specify because I didn't want to upset you, but
no, Alistair. No, that doesn't. The fact that it's on the chin doesn't upset me. The fact
the chin.
That you're not, you know, I feel like I would be a sort of a thought leader, putting myself on the line to drive
I love
humanity
that you contribute.
Forward.
I love that you try to contribute.
Thanks, Al. That's
it's. I think it's actually really cute
that I offer. Yeah.
That you make offers.
These little
and
things.
And that you
that
keep
you say.
Trying after all of these years. You know? It's so
it's cute.
I love
it's
it.
Cute.
It's really beautiful.
It's cute what
it's
you
really
do.
And cute. So you don't feel bad for looking at phone.
That's right. Do you know that when reading was first invented?
Yeah.
Is this true? Is this true that when reading was first invented, it was very, very normal for people to move their lips when they read to themselves? Does that seem possible?
From a human perspective, sexes seem a relatively simple thing to get one's head around. It makes sense when you're reading out loud, I guess.
What were you reading?
This was about everything you wanted to know about sexes.
Ah.
About the origin of sexes.
Mm, sure. No, this is for our other podcast.
Yeah, this is because we were doing research for the pop test, and
returning
so we're doing
in August,
an episode returning in August, and we're doing an episode on reproduction.
Mm.
But then I guess I realized that going into the origin of sexes might just be something we touch on rather than something that.
Sure.
But it is kind of important, I think.
It feels very important.
Why did we go to this two slightly different creature systems?
And I believe that there are some organisms which have a vast number of biological sexes. And it would be very interesting to look into what it's
fungi
what
or those. Fungi, as the experts would say.
Yeah. it's incredible for all the experts to be wrong about that.
I know. It was unbelievable. Andy, I think I've come up with a line for the pop test just then.
Oh, yeah.
So, why are there sexes? And why is one of the... Why?
You sure what? About this, Al? Are you sure
yeah,
about
wait,
this?
Wait. I almost have it. Wait. Okay, wait. It's not very good. I don't think it's great, but I think where did sexes come from, and why does one of them always be shopping? I don't know. That's really dumb.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it would be interesting to look at those species that do have, you know, seven different genders, and try to categorize them in terms of which subsets of those genders be shopping.
I mean, it would be great to actually, because, you know, there's lots of like studies that show that, you know, there's homosexuality in nature, and that there's, you know, lots of that stuff like that, right? But I don't know how many studies look at the role of gender or sex in nature and whether or not, and the frequency in which they be shopping. And of course you would have to define shopping in a different, you know, in a more nature type way.
I don't have to do anything, Alistair. Don't you tell me what to do. This is my study. Okay? I'm going to set the parameters. No, it's literal shopping.
It's...
Isn't it interesting?
Well, I mean, we do know that seagulls sometimes walk into it like a 7-Eleven and just take a bag of chips.
Mm. Yeah.
Which gender tends to do that the most? Which sex?
Well, but that's interesting to me because that is shopping, which I think is fundamentally different to shopping. You know,
well, that's
I think shopping
lifting.
Shopping is a broader thing that encompasses things like, you know, buying bread. And, you know, necessities. But I think shopping, in the sense that that some of the sexes be it, I think is a different thing that's more limited to the subset of luxury items.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. Would you consider, say, and I know that this actually probably doesn't fit your definition of shopping, but the bower bird, with all the blue stuff that it collects for to sort of decorate its place, would you consider the male bower bird in this case to be the one who'd be shopping more?
Yeah, I mean he's definitely decorating.
That's true. Yeah,
but. Whether or not I guess he is shopping. Yeah, no, I would say that is a good example of shopping in nature.
Yeah, great.
Because it's not about that. I wouldn't consider those to be necessities. Be interesting to live with a bowerbird, and try. I'm just picturing sending your bowerbird husband, I guess, off to the supermarket with a list of really specific things that you need.
Yeah.
Like quite important stuff for the household. And
sure. WD-40.
Later on, well, you pick something that's in a blue can
That's what he comes back with. It's not even doesn't even have any WD-40 in it.
But it's but then he comes
found this
back
on the side of the road
quite sheepishly with the bag. Yeah. Not really wanting to let you see what's in the bag. And you know, you then do have to go through the things and, you know, in quite a disappointed tone of voice, point out that once again, you know, you sent your bowerbird husband out to get bread and muesli bars for the kids' lunch boxes.
And then everything is blue.
It's just blue things. It's just
And then this is like the wife or whatever.
Yeah.
And then while she's talking, he's picking things up and sort of putting them on top of shelves and like spreading them around the room. And then she goes, "You did it again. I'm really disappointed." And then he goes, "Want to have sex?"
And then she looks at the particular arrangement of blue object in the room and she's like, "You know what I do?"
Yes.
I do. Yeah. Because you know how to get me. You
And they have like seven kids.
It's not going to work this time, Eric. I know. I'm really angry. I'm really disappointed and angry.
He does start swooning a little bit around the house while he's doing it. I know. While he's putting things around, and then he's like,
"So okay, this is not." I don't think it's not a physical bowerbird. This guy doesn't have the form of a bowerbird, but it's clearly a man who has the mind of a bowerbird.
Yeah.
And all those same behavioral instincts. And it turns out that it does have the effect on his wife. This is a world in which maybe humans evolved from bowerbirds. That there is that our courtship, our courtship, still has some, you know, in the way that there are like very animal parts of our sexuality as humans, you know, that are quite basic needs and urges and instincts, but a big subset of those, the things that get us turned on, have been replaced with primitive bowerbird instincts.
Sure. And I mean, it could just be cultural, you know?
Could be.
Because, I mean, we have the ability to kind of just see something and mimic it rather than, you know, it have to be deeply ingrained. But, I mean, it could be a, you know, a situation in which humans evolved from the bird.
Yeah.
I'm definitely open to that, Andy. I've just written down Boward Bird Husband. And for me, that's, you know, we can work out the details of it once we're
in there on the day.
Once we're in there. Yeah.
Once the cameras are rolling.
Which is actually probably close to how we actually recorded Australia Get It Up, yeah.
It is exactly how we did Australia Get It Up.
we'll fly to South Australia. We know that we want to go to a salt lake.
Yeah, now. We know it's 4 hours to the salt lake.
We know it's a 4-hour drive to the salt lake. Now, once we're about an hour and a half from the salt lake, let's start talking about what we're going to do there.
This is so
I think it should be a guy
accurate.
I think it should be a guy who is trying to get land speed records in some way.
Yeah, now. What resources do we have or could we pick up from a shop between here and the Salt Lake that would allow us to film that?
And I think then we did stop at a market and we're like, there's a wig.
Yeah. We went to a Kmart and got some weird shorts.
Weird shorts, yeah.
Two pairs. That's a costume.
they could be brother and sister.
Perfect. That's what explains why they've got matching shorts.
Ah, yes.
She can be pregnant. We'll shove something up her.
We'll do something in there, yeah.
Up her jumper.
It could be a third pair of shorts.
Still, probably one of the better sketches, if not the best sketch from Australia Get It Up Here. So, you know.
Look, I mean, I think it's dangerous to overwrite things.
Yeah. That's what we learned. That's what we learned. And then we almost lost the keys to the van.
On the salt flat. While we were losing light.
That's exactly right.
Oh, my God.
I still regret that the ending of that sketch, we said that we had the guy in text after at the end of the sketch, he killed himself.
I actually reflected on that in the last couple of days, and I actually was like, no, I think that was right.
No, but I don't regret that he killed himself. I just wish that we'd added the fact that he was running at a land speed record. He killed himself while running at really high speed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That would have been good.
And so he did actually successfully break a record.
Jeez, I wonder whether there's any way to edit this text on screen bit. This
look, it was now so long ago that I imagine whatever the format was that it was filmed in just isn't compatible with anything.
It's doc 97. No, this is not actually going to be retrievable.
We filmed this in doc format.
Yeah.
Anyway,
not even Open Office reads that now.
I imagine that, you know, that 8 minutes of conversation was extremely unpleasant for a large number of people who have no idea what we're talking about to listen.
How can they find it? And then they can know what we're talking about.
They can find the Australia Get It Up Your Facebook page. And from there, they can follow the links to the hidden episodes on YouTube and watch.
Yeah,
it
should be called Land Speed Record or something like that.
Yeah. You know, it'll be there. It'll be there somewhere. I'm going to get it all in clips, and I'm going to post some of it occasionally. Anyway, Alistair, how many sketch ideas have we got written down?
So far, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
The bar is low today.
No, it's all good. It's all good. So we got 3 words from a listener. So today, the 3 words from a listener, again, was a scenario in which I wasn't sure that... whether or not that I had done them before. But then this time I ran them by Andy.
Mm.
I ran-deed them. Ran-deed them.
Oh, dear, Alistair.
And they are... And so there's a chance Andy will know the words. But even though Andy said he doesn't remember us doing them, I think that there's a chance we've already done them. But they come from listener Adrian Hernandez Arista. Hello, Adrian.
Adrian, thank you so much for this.
And
what a joy it is to hear your name.
Now, Andy, do you remember what the words are?
Oh, you know what? It's come back to me now. I'm really sorry. I promised you that I'd forget them before the episode ended, but yeah. I have just remembered them. Closeted Homo sapien son.
Yeah, that's right. He promised that he would forget them, so that's the only reason why I did it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but what this. Immediately brings to my mind is a short story that I read by Isaac Asimov about they build this kind of time machine that allows them to go back to the time of Neanderthals and bring back a Neanderthal boy. But the way that the machine works is it requires a huge amount of energy to keep this kind of time bubble open. And the boy can therefore only live in this very small area in the modern day, right? He can live in there. And in the end, this woman who's been looking after him, they decide that not enough people are coming to see the Neanderthal boy at the museum or whatever, so they decide to shut it down and send him back to the past. And as a result, the woman decides to go back with her boy, with the boy, into the past and live with him. Back then.
Wow.
And it's it's what happens.
As a mother figure?
I've got to go to the front door and let the children into the house. So I'll leave you for a moment.
No problem. Well, this idea that I suppose she goes back as a mother. I don't know what she would bring back with her. I guess they probably have enough flint there. Maybe they don't have any flint. Maybe a knife. Would a knife be useful?
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Would a knife be useful in the past, do you think? I guess for cutting, not for cutting rock, but maybe for cutting animals. But then, would she mess up the future? But she wouldn't get to see the future. So I guess, it's like, well, would you make a mess if you know that you don't have to clean it up? I would. I definitely would. But this doesn't get us any closer to closeted Homo sapien son.
I'm back.
Oh, I had a feeling.
Is there a type of time travel that would work where we can only go back really, really far, right? We can only go back super far to the point where anything we do, like, because, there's always that option, that possibility in time travel where you say, oh, going back will change the present day. But then there's also the version where, well, actually, the world we're in today as it is now could only really is because you went back and changed things in the past, right? And that sort of preserves the cause and effect thing. But it gets a bit messy if you go back to sort of recent history where we'd be like, well, but we kind of remember it and there'd be some pretty obvious evidence of the technology that you took with you or whatever. But if you go back like, a billion years, 2 billion, maybe you could even you'd have to go back to like when the Earth was all like covered in lava or something like that. Oh, hang on, wait. I think I'm just describing basically the plot of Loki, that series on Disney. Forget it. But a time travel thing where you can do it, but only if you go back so far that it's not interesting. You don't really you can do it, but you can go. You have to go back so far that you don't get anything out of the experience at all. You can go back to sort of that time when the universe was cooling and no stars had formed and everything was just sort of a gas. You can go back to then and it's fine.
I think there's always that risk that if you go back in time that you will appear where the planet isn't.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's probably one of the biggest risks. Which makes the portal-to-portal style seem more plausible.
Yeah, which means that you can only go back as far as when you first created the time machine.
Indeed, yes.
That's the only thing that keeps it possible, I feel. Yeah. Because or else you go, well, if there was one, then why haven't we seen any time travel people? If somebody invents one in the future, why hasn't it become a,
That's what.
But then people would keep it secret potentially, because you don't want to fuck things up.
Exactly. Sorry. Anyway, closeted Homo sapiens son. This is you go back, and you're living with Neanderthals, and you have to hide the fact that you're a different species.
Well, that's what the first Homo sapien would have been. I mean, I realize it wouldn't have come directly from Neanderthals.
No, that's
true. Or Neanderthals. But, either Homo erectus or Homo habilis or whatever it is. Maybe Homo erectus? Is that where we came from?
Sure. Yeah. Sounds about right.
So there would have been a scenario in which both parents were Homo erectus, and then there would have been a Homo sapien child.
Mm, Yeah, and they presumably, you know, are trying to hide their Homo sapien tendencies, which I guess would be having a slightly different skull shape.
That's right. So they wear caps, or they wear sort of big Napoleon hats.
Yeah, and
Maybe that's where like turbans and stuff came from.
Maybe using tools.
Art.
I mean, art. That fits quite well with the analogy.
The desire to wipe out whole civilizations of other human species.
Mm. Yeah.
You think that? How long do you think they would have suppressed that? I guess until there was a much more majority population of.
But
sapiens.
You know, maybe when they reveal who they truly are to their Homo erectus parents, they've actually got really, really accepting Homo erectus parents
who
are so accepting, in fact, that they're saying, look, just to show you how on board we are, how supportive we are of this, we'd like you to wipe us out first.
That's so nice.
Isn't that nice?
That is nice. And probably in a scenario where maybe Homo erectus are getting wiped out for some reason, you know, eating your parents probably would be very beneficial for your survival.
Exactly. And it would make for a very heartwarming coming out video. When the sort of the stoop backed Homo erectus father who you expect isn't going to be cool with it actually is.
Starts tying himself to his own sort of roasting stick.
Mm.
You know, he helps build the fire on which he's going to get, you know, crackled.
And you know what's great about this?
What?
It's not cannibalism. This was the only point in history where somebody had the opportunity to eat their own parents without it being weird. Because
yeah, that's
they're a
true.
Different species.
Finally, completely morally okay.
Yep. So, little loophole there. Would have been almost a shame if they didn't do it.
Yeah, I guess especially if they'd already had a family, this kid, and with some other Homo erectus daughter of somebody else, and their kids would have been sort of more Homo erectus-y.
Mm.
I think it's a pretty there's no clear lines in this, right? Because I don't think, you know, the Homo sapien born would have been born to super, like the most Homo erectus-y parents. They probably would have already been a bit on the way.
That's true.
It's not.
Yes.
It's not necessarily going to be one.
Yeah, it's
one mutation.
Well. It's going to be something that the court is going to have to unpick, I think, the drawing that line. And I'm not sure if it would work as a defense today if you did eat somebody and then tried to argue that your various mutations in your genome meant that the law doesn't apply to you because you're not technically a human.
Can somebody be born and then be like, can a scientist go, you're actually a new species?
It must happen. It must happen.
Yeah?
Yeah. Within species that new ones are born who are no longer of that species. Otherwise, how'd you get a new species? And therefore...
And like, especially now that we got billions of people on Earth.
Mm.
There must just be people who are being born who are new species. And there must be biologists who can go, actually, you're better. You're better. I mean, there must be one where they can go, you're worse.
Yeah.
But
you're different.
You're different.
That's good. It's something.
Yeah. Look, do you think that this is where we should wrap things up?
I think so. We really grabbed it.
Yeah. I mean, we just did closeted Homo sapien son as is. You know, we didn't even change it.
Well, I think we made him a cannibal, and that's our own special flair.
That's right. Accountable to eating his own parents.
And, you know, I think looking at it as a legal defense that may have some relevance in the modern day.
Sure. Of course. Know.
And we're all about those bottom draw legal defenses, Alistair. That's
bottom jaw.
That's an entire
bottom jaw would actually be how he would define his own. He could use that as a way of, as evidence for his being a different species.
That's right.
You know, bottom drawer legal defense is something I've only heard of yesterday, and then today is the second time I've heard it.
But it's something that we've talked about. You know, we've talked about those desperate last, you know, defenses a lot on this show. So, yes, now we know what it's called.
Absolutely, yeah. Andy, I'm going to take us through the sketch ideas for today.
Please.
We have aliens that stink, and we have to not mention it. Right? They don't have a sense of smell, and so we don't want to offend them, and they're introducing us. You know, they are kind of our gateway to the galactic community.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're not the most popular ones. You know, they probably are the nerds or the stinky kid of the galactic community. But that gets us into the galactic community no less. That's what we need. There probably is a galactic community, and we actually need to make contact with one. Because if there is one, right, we need an in.
We need to be invited. You need to be invited.
Yeah, we need, like, so they're probably different species that are around, and they're keeping an eye. They go, look, you guys check out this sector. Y'all check out that sector over there. And if there's anybody good, bring them in.
We got to be cool. Be cool. Man. Everyone act normal.
All right. Take a bite from my sandwich. I don't know. Exercise unicycle. You look at most exercise bikes and they put two wheels on there.
Yep.
They don't. But I love to think about how different it would be. Would you still have that balance thing you would have to do?
I think that's a big part of it. Yeah. I think you still got to look like a real fuckhead. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's definitely no handlebars. And you're sort of balancing up there.
And you got to balance
with
because with a regular
sort of flailing out to the sides.
Mm. Yeah. Because the exercise bike takes away the having to balance up thing. But this one shouldn't remove. I guess it still removes the balancing up, but it doesn't remove the balancing forward and back.
Yes.
Then we've got workout gear shouldn't make things easier, but harder. And so this is like a company that is releasing a line of workout gear that actually make things, you know, makes you use more energy. These are heavy shoes.
Yeah.
These are shoes that have, you know, pediatrician. No, what's the foot one? Podiatrist.
Yeah.
Podiatrist recommended sort of concrete inserts in your shoes.
This is a hat that's got a big sail on it.
Yeah, cargo swimming cargo pants and hoodie.
Cargo pants with all the pockets are wide open.
Yeah, absolutely. Then we got low viscosity pools for space management. This is once we get into, you know, overpopulated territory and big cities don't have as much space for 50 meter pools, but you could have a 20 meter pool with probably a lower viscosity liquid like a.
Yeah. I mean, like I could be wrong about it being lower viscosity.
We don't know. We don't know. But right now, we're just going to take a guess, Andy. We're going to take a guess.
Yeah.
Probably harder. I think if you got to do more work because I guess to swim in air would take so much energy.
That's right? True.
So to keep yourself afloat and swimming in water would be a sort of a lesser extreme version of that, but more difficult. But then to move through solid rock is extremely difficult.
Again,
as
difficult.
Well.
Yes. Extremely. You know?
So to move through molasses might also be difficult, especially, I guess, if you add stickiness to it, not just viscosity, but stickiness, that would add drag. What is stickiness if not just drag?
It's a good point.
You know, or a wolf pulling on your leg.
Okay, now you got my attention. What is stickiness if not a wolf pulling on your leg?
Well, I was talking about drag, but no,
I know,
apologies.
I know.
You did it. Extra eyes on chin just for the phone. So you don't feel bad for looking at your phone when you take your eyes off your phone. You know, because that's the problem. I mean, that was one of the details I added. I know that's not really the whole point of the thing. It's more for driving. But the idea is that there is a possibility that the reason that you feel bad, you get an opportunity to feel bad for looking too much at your phone, is because there's a moment there where you're not looking at your phone.
Yeah.
And although, you get the opportunity to...
It's a very good theory. I will say that sometimes I do feel bad while I am looking at my phone.
I know, but that's because you're looking internally, which is taking a moment away from your
phone. You're right. You know what? You're right. My attention was on myself. I was being too self-centered.
Then we got study of animals, study of the animal world, and studying which sexes are more likely to be shopping. Then we have bower bird husband, which is the husband who was sent out to go do grocery shopping, but then came back with just things that were blue. And then we've got the first Homo sapien son coming out to their Homo erectus parents.
It's really great, Al. What a little collection.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's 8 in an hour. That's doing the maths on
that. Don't do the maths on that, Al.
Don't do the maths.
I don't want to know. I don't want to know.
We can't. Yeah. So then we got
thank you so much for listening to Two in the Think Tank. We like that you do that thing to this. And we can be found on the internet. I'm at Stupid Old Andy.
I'm at Alistair TB. I'm at A Trombley Birchall on Instagram. We're at Two in Tank on both Twitter and Instagram. You can support us on Patreon if you like. Thank you to everybody who does so much. Thank you to anyone who's ever watched Magma or came to see Teleport.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, thank you to anyone who's listened to the Pop Test. We have now done a lot of stuff. Anyway, thank you very much. I hope your lives continue to be good or get better if they haven't been good. Goodbye to you. And good night.
And we love
you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.